I'm so excited to tell you JCPenney and country music singer-songwriter Walker Hayes are partnering together on a new limited-time men's collection for the everyday guy. What I love about Walker Hayes is his laid-back nature. He's a family man and being a country megastar while also having 7 kids. You know he likes to keep his style cool and casual. This new collection is perfect for the guy living the t-shirt life or someone wanting some fresh options that feel just as good. It's easy to wear, affordable styles that celebrate the ultimate family man, along with the quality, durability, and sensibility dads appreciate. Available online Saturday, May 4th at jcp.com and in-store Thursday, May 16th. Just in time for Father's Day. Limited time only. JCPenney, make it count.
Welcome back. I am Dale Lally. He is Matt Williamson over here chatty, playing Chatty Cathy.
What I'm really doing, though, is I'm enjoying the recruits interacting here next door. Just brings back my roots, my memories back here. It's cool getting a bunch of recruits together that don't know each other, and they're all in the same building, and they start to get a little competitive. It's fun.
Yeah, yeah.
16, 17-year-olds.
We're trying to watch the Steelers practice here.
And yeah.
They're doing that right in front of us here. As they get this, looks like some offensive linemen and tight ends.
A lot of big bodies.
Yeah.
Going to grow up and be a lot bigger.
Yeah. So, anyways, the Steelers, they're wrapping up their OTA practice, number 6 over. They're on the far field today, so we can't see quite as well.
Yeah. But they should be nicer to us and do it right on this one.
Yeah, right here in front of us.
They didn't ask us our opinion on that.
They did not. They did not. They never do.
No.
I was going to say seldom do, but they never do.
No, of course
never
not.
Do. Anyways, we are live from the Steelers OTA sessions here at the UPMC Rooney Sports Complex. Today, we are expected to be joined by Isaac Seumalo, the Steelers' new guard. There were some.
I was hesitant to bring it up. We've been.
I've been told
on
again.
This,
yeah. Well, I mean, the first two times were technical difficulties on our end.
Right.
Yesterday,
it's
it
not
was,
his fault. Right.
Yeah. Yesterday, he and the offensive line were out there working very long after practice, and by the time they came off the field, everybody from PR had gone inside, and well, they forgot about us.
And kind of forgot about us, and he did as well.
And he did as well. And I wouldn't expect him to remember since
no.
You know, he was first told about it like last Wednesday.
Good point.
So, you know,
lots happened since then.
A lot has happened since then.
And who knows? So I assume, I'm just guessing, he may stick around after practice because it seems like something he does with some.
It's what the offensive line does. Yeah. They stick around. They hang out.
He's the old man
go
on
over
the line
some stuff on the, yeah.
Yeah. I'm hoping, well, I'm sure it'll happen sometime between now and during camp. I want to ask some of the James Daniels, Chooks Korfor, what's Isaac been as a resource for you? You know, he's been around the league a little longer. He's a little older, widely regarded as a fantastic football mind. I'm wondering if he's chirping up and throwing some suggestions in or not, or all those things. So there's an interesting dynamic on that O-line. And
yeah,
by the way,
sure
you got a high first-round pick in the mix.
Yeah, absolutely. Got a nice mix of now old and young.
But a lot of experience.
Yeah,
a lot of experience, yeah. I was blown away last year with the combination of youth and experience on the O-line. That's hard to do.
Yeah. And the buzzer or the horn is sounded there, so that wraps up practice. So they'll go off in their little position groups here and have a chat about everything that just happened, and then they'll break off. Guys who would want to stay out here and work will stay out here and work.
Mm-hmm.
Others will head for the locker room and go get showered up and head off to some team meetings or whatever they got to do. Before, you know, that's just the way this goes.
You mentioned this before, though. I mean, this is a Thursday, though. I'm sure a lot of these guys might go back to their home city for the weekend or figure out, you know, their apartment here or, you know, I mean, there's life in the way.
That's why these things aren't mandatory. That's why these things, you know, when people get all upset that this player or that player is not here.
They have other commitments, too.
Yeah.
You know, right.
If your boss told you that this is not mandatory, mm-hmm. that you come to something, and you were well established in your job. You're
right.
You know,
We witnessed in the indoor the other day, there could be some very established NFL players that decide I'm going to work out my way, not your way.
Right.
I mean, it's not like I'm not using my time properly.
Yeah. I mean, you don't. They're not sitting around eating Cheetos.
They could be, and
they
it's going to cost them. But right.
Yeah, you're not going to have a job.
Most aren't. Right.
Yeah. These guys put the time in. They put the effort in.
Mm-hmm.
And well, you know, you do have to balance everything and. Trust me, if a guy's not here,
it's not the end of the world.
It's not the end of the world, and I guarantee you that, like, Mike Tomlin knows.
I'm sure he has
why
a
guy
why,
if somebody misses a day.
And I doubt it's, boy, my I'm not happy with my contract or my role or this team or trade me or any of that kind of stuff.
Yeah, you're not getting any of that kind of stuff out of, Pittsburgh this year.
No.
But you see in some other places. I mean, that's really one of the reason why DeAndre Hopkins got released.
Yeah.
Was there was some – yeah, they didn't want him
around.
He started ripping management and things of that nature, mm-hmm. and that's going to get you out of town.
Yeah, that's a hairy situation there. I mean, they're looking for leaders. They obviously are rebuilding. They told the world with that release that, hey, we understand we're not going to win anything this year. I mean, that's just where we're at. So, obviously, a much different situation here. I always wonder, too, you know, like maybe the young guys that are new to town, you know, half of them are going home and or leaving town. Other half are sticking around. I'm just guessing. But they don't have a lot of buddies yet. So do you go ask the fifth-round pick and you're the third-round pick, hey, let's do dinner tonight. I don't know you that well.
Yeah,
I don't know anybody else.
You guys in your position room.
Come over and play Madden.
That's right. You know, rookie classes tend to be pretty close with each other because of
right,
that.
Right, right, right.
They're thrown together a lot.
They're asked. They're all fish out of water in a new town. And, you know, right. And they're both – they're all similar age, of course. You know,
that's what's
like
interesting about the Patrick Peterson dynamic. He really is. I mean, you're talking about Patrick Peterson is – older than pretty much everybody.
Is he the oldest Steeler now?
No. I mean, Hayward's still.
Is Hayward. Aren't they in the same draft class?
They're in the same draft class. I think Hayward's a little, like a couple months older.
Okay.
But you heard that with Ben. Like,
but there's not many over 30s
you know,
on this roster.
Ben's 39 years old, and, you know, they're drafting quarterbacks and things of that. Like, Ben and Mason Rudolph are almost a full generation.
Oh, right.
Apart.
Like, I mean, Ben's a perfect example, but can you imagine Brady? You know, I mean,
yeah. And what do you have, you know?
His wife's a supermodel, and, you know.
Yeah, you're living two different lifestyles here.
Right. I mean, people probably don't even remember Giselle as a supermodel that he's been drafted with, let alone Brady's rookie year or Brady at Michigan or Ben at Miami or any of that kind of stuff.
After a while, you get tired of people. You know, I watched you. I was a kid when you were played in the Super Bowl in 2005.
Right.
I remember watching that game, like,
I mean, do you think Ben has heard a million times, even from a teammate, that I used to use you on Madden?
Yeah.
And I'm like, yeah, okay. That's cool.
I get
mean,
it.
It's
yeah,
cool
so
no matter what.
That's only the 20th time I've heard that this week.
This week, right, right. So, interesting. But, no, this is a very young team, but it doesn't lack leadership.
No, it certainly does not. And that leadership, I think, you see that come out. I mean, as we watch guys, you know, there's a bunch of guys over there running after
You don't
practice.
Have to do that.
No, know. Absolutely
right.
not. But they're doing it as a group.
Yeah. Throwing the helmet off and go run sprints.
A little bit of that often tends to be like, okay, these five guys from my position group are running.
I don't want to be the one.
I don't want to do it, but I'm going to do it because it's peer pressure.
And this sounds bad, but it was really true with the Browns is, man, this is a down time of year, but – what if the head coach walks by? I don't want my office to be empty and get out of here at 5 o'clock. So I'll just throw another game tape on, although I know this play. You know, like,
I'll go have some more ice cream.
Or just be here, you know. But I really don't want to be here at this point. And, frankly, I wasn't that productive at that point. Like, get out of there, you know. But these guys are obviously a lot more productive than I am at that point.
Yeah.
Noticed the other day, too. Like, even between running back drills, Jaylen Warren would just go off the side, run two gassers, you know.
Yeah.
You know, things like that. Like, might as well.
Yeah, you see a lot of guys doing stuff like that. And it's about being in football shape and you know, knowing, especially for a guy like Jaylen Warren, knowing what football shape is now.
Yeah.
You know, last year he didn't.
Nice find.
Yeah, last year you wouldn't have known. I mean, how would he?
Sure. You know, does Washington, Herbig, Porter, do those guys know? And I think
that's why having a guy like Patrick Peterson around is so invaluable. That's why having a guy like an Isaac Seumalo is so valuable.
Absolutely.
A James Daniels, guys who have been starters.
And this might shock people, but I think we had this conversation, we've had a lot of them, that a lot of these rookies, when they come to OTAs, aren't in as good a shape as you think. Well, why is that? Well, because they spent like a month touring around the different teams and on planes.
They spent 2 months getting ready for the combine.
Right, basically. Working on their starts and their verticals, you know, and not with pads on and that type of thing, where NFL players know what to expect every phase of the season, of the whole calendar year, where the rookies were just trying to get themselves drafted and appeal to the Giants and Commanders and everybody else. It's tough to do your regiment when you're torn around the country and they're taking out the dinners and, you know, things like that.
Yeah, I mean, you know.
These next couple months or so is crucial for those guys.
Well, that will be Mike Tomlin's. That'll be his message, I guarantee you, when he speaks again at the end of the OTA sessions, mm-hmm. or actually the end of the minicamp session, telling those rookies that they need to, what kind of shape they need to be in when they come back, in, you know, for training camp.
That's what I was going to say.
Some will get it, some won't. You know, again, you can take that 6 weeks off or 5 weeks off, whatever it turns out to be, and go on vacation and do those kind of things. Again, life gets in the way.
Of course.
Other guys will be out training and doing those things, you know, the entire time. Training camp is not what it used to be. You know, when they had the, you know, 8 weeks of training camp, those guys used that to get in shape.
No,
you better show up in shape.
That's what I was going to say is, I mean, a veteran head coach like Tomlin, I'm sure, doesn't bother him at all that a lot of these rookies are gassed easier than you would like. You don't have to play tomorrow. You get that. But if day one of training camp, the same guys aren't in better shape, well, you don't have any excuses anymore. You aren't touring around the league right. eating dinners and stuff. I mean, this was
You know what you're going to be doing. You know where you're going to be at.
Yeah.
Get yourself ready.
This is how you chose to use your time, and you didn't use it wisely. But, of course, on the flip side is, wow, he looks a lot better shape now. He can go all day where he couldn't in OTAs. Well, he's been working hard. You know?
Yeah, right. Absolutely. That's the way that goes.
And that doesn't mean he can't go to the beach for a week or, you know.
Oh, yeah, you could take some time.
Take your girlfriend to Maui or whatever. Yeah. I mean, enjoy it because it's going to be a grind. But
yeah, your next 7 months are going to be pretty booked.
Yeah, it is. So, interesting time for these guys, though.
Yeah. Let's take another break here. The offensive line starting to
trickle this
direction. So hopefully we'll get Isaac Seumalo on here as he comes off the field. He is Matt Williamson. I am Dale Lally. You're listening to a special edition of The Drive here on Steelers Nation Radio. We are live from the Steelers OTA sessions here on the South Side. We'll be back with more right after this. Welcome back. I am Dale Lally. He is Matt Williamson, and this is a special edition of The Drive here on Steelers Nation Radio and ESPN 970. And, we are live from the Steelers OTA sessions here at the UPMC Rooney Sports Complex, and we're pleased to be joined now by Isaac Seumalo, the Steelers' new offensive guard. And, Isaac, how you doing?
What's up, guys? Doing good. Glad to be here. Appreciate you guys having me on.
How's the Pittsburgh experience treated you so far since signing?
It's been good.
Good.
I mean, a lot of guys reached out when I first signed, and obviously the fans in the city is – a football place, so no, it's been awesome.
Good.
Isaac, I had an opportunity to talk to your dad. It's been about 5 weeks now, and he said Isaac's a man of few words. He doesn't talk a lot. Your dad is not that way. Your dad talks a lot. What's the difference there in the personalities? I mean, he's pretty outgoing and obviously is a football guy.
Yeah, I mean he's a coach, so I think it's part of his job is to, you know, speak. But I actually think we're similar in that I think if it was his choice, he wouldn't be talking too much. And I just don't, you know, I mean, I just speak when I have to. And I think observing and listening is usually the way to go in most situations.
Does he critique your game still?
Yeah, but it's different than what it used to be.
I bet, yeah.
At this point, he's more concerned about me making sure I call my mom and
doing dad stuff instead of coach stuff. That's cool.
I mean, he's just, I think he's just a proud father, which I'm, you know, very humbly and thankful for.
Now, you come from it's a football family. I don't know if a lot of people know this. Your sister works for the 49ers, correct?
She does, yeah. In the scouting department.
Oh, okay.
Yep.
So that's going to be pretty cool. Do you guys talk football when you get together?
No. I mean, it's like, you know, we do this for work, so I think at the end of the day we'd rather just talk about, you know, other things going on in our lives.
Makes some sense. So another, just a hunch, major influence I would think would be Jason Kelce, you know, playing next to him. And frankly, I think he's as good a center as I've ever seen and a unique player. How did you learn from him, and what was that experience like? You know, not even just playing with him, but all the time in the meeting rooms and that sort of thing.
Yeah, I mean, everything you see and hear about him from a distance is true in person.
Really?
Not only on the field is he a tremendous, you know, player and, you know, in person, but also off the field. You know what I mean? He's been a good friend of mine for a long time, and which I'm very appreciative of. I think you know, just being like a good person and friend off the field, I think that's not commonplace. Mm-hmm. I think, but I also do think in the O-line room you see that a lot, just because, you know, guys are kind of together in this this grind. But I mean, his capability, his mental capacity is, you know, unlimited passion. His the way he plays with reckless abandon, but still kind of knows what's going on at all the time. And I mean, it's been incredible to watch and see for the past 7 years.
I bet.
Now, your dad's a defensive line coach and has been for a long time, and he's you know, obviously been at the college level. How did you end up on the offensive line? That's the exact opposite. Like, offensive linemen and defensive linemen aren't supposed to mix, are they?
Nah, I mean, we all wear black and yellow out here, so, you know, we're all going towards a common purpose. You know, obviously, you know, I played D-line in high school, and I think it just came down that, you know, I'd be better on this side, and thought I had a, you know, thankfully and very blessed to have the opportunity to play offensive line in the NFL. So it kind of worked out. But there's a lot, I think, as an offensive lineman, the more you know about D-linemen, the better you can play. I think seeing things from their perspective and why they do what they do makes you feel more comfortable in why you have to do what you do as an offensive lineman.
So one of the things your dad said is he's told me that you play offensive line with a defensive lineman's mentality.
Sure.
You like to deliver the blow.
Yeah, I mean, I think the, you know, I think the thing that gets overlooked at offensive line is, you know, you have the ability and the license to play with very violently at times, and then at times, you know, how to accurately and precisely be violent. And I think the defensive lineman can understand that. But, yeah, man, I mean, who doesn't – you're allowed to go out there and you know, hit people without, you know, any regard for you know, laws and rules of mankind. So, no, it's an awesome feeling.
So I wanted to spin it back real quick to your experience with the Eagles, which I'm sure was a positive one. I thought it was the best offensive line in the league last year. I mentioned Kelsey. Lane Johnson's been maybe the best right tackle in the league during that same stretch. But the left tackle, Jordan Mulata, kind of came from nowhere and was just a really talented project. Do you see Broderick Jones? I mean, a different path. He's a first-round pick. But could you see him progressing like Jordan did next year?
Yeah, I mean, obviously they're different, you know, body types and mm-hmm. come from different backgrounds and whatnot, but Broderick got all the tools and athleticism in the world. You know, like, I think offensive line is one of those things that just takes time and experience. Yeah. Regardless of, you know, there's very rare guys that can come in and play right away, but I think Broderick possesses those tools and being able to know when to use, you know, each tool, and then when to I think that's the hard part about offensive line, is knowing when to do something a certain way versus another way, understanding angles, understanding when I have the license to be play a little bit more reckless versus where I got to be a little more under control. But
aggression, I mean, doesn't seem to be a problem for him.
No, it does not. He's definitely an aggressive guy. And sometimes you kind of have to teach guys how to hone that aggression and kind of foster it into a you know, proper angle on a run block or using your hands a certain way. But no, he's got all the tools, so I'm excited to see him grow.
So just jumping back to when you're growing up, you guys were all homeschooled, correct?
Yes, I was homeschooled till like high school or middle school. So was my older brother, and yeah, we were all homeschooled for a certain amount of time.
Your dad, your mom did a lot of that, and your grandmother as well?
Yeah, growing up in Hawaii, my grandma did all that for me and my older brother especially, and then my mom growing up outside of Hawaii. And it was definitely a unique experience.
What's up? I'm John Wall.
And I'm CJ Toledano, and we're starting a new podcast presented by DraftKings called Point Game. We're now joined by three-time NBA Sixth Man of the Year, elite bucket getter. Let's please welcome Jamal Crawford to Point Game. King of the Court one-on-one tournament. If they had it back in your prime, do you think he could have took it all?
I'm going to be honest with you. I don't think I could have took it all, but I think I would have shocked a lot of people. I think Kobe and everybody in their prime, Kobe would win a one-on-one contest.
Because you got to think, he's going to guard. He don't care about guarding.
He's going to guard.
He's going to guard. Like, you see him in the Olympics, he's going to guard. And then on top of that.
I'm not guarding like that. See that?
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Sam Cassell to Point Game.
I remember you came to my room crying tears. I mean, he was in a culture shock. And then he's going to withdraw us about winning.
Remember what I told you? I said, OG, you think I can get paid and go back and play in college? Because it ain't it.
Check out Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano on the iHeartRadio app, DraftKings YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And on your mom's side of the family, a lot of college professors and things of that nature. Like,
yeah, my uncle's a math professor. My mom's dad, who passed away, was a professor. I mean, a lot of real smart people.
So the grading was probably a little bit more difficult than what you saw in a regular elementary school.
Yeah, the expectations and the standard. Once you set a standard, you know what I mean, that kind of becomes the standard, and regardless of, you know, it's all about what's relatively good for you, and it may not, you know, be, it may objectively be good, but subjectively it needs to be, good enough for me.
And your dad said he had stuff set up in your backyard, like step ladders and things like that. You guys did all the football work.
Yeah, me and my older brother used to do, box jumps and drills and all kinds of crazy stuff in the backyard, but I mean, I don't regret it at all. It was some good time.
Sounds like you go from the islands, you go move to San Luis Obispo, and then eventually to Corvallis. That's the life of being a football coach's son, though, isn't it? I mean, you can kind of move around a little bit.
Yeah, it's a unique life, but I think it gave me a lot of advantages and insights, like being able to go to games like that and spend time with other college coaches or football college players and kind of see that other side of it was really cool.
Last question I really have for you is, do you get a chance to go back to Hawaii very often? And will you get there before training camp by chance?
If it was up to some of my family, I'd be there every week. But
not easy, though.
Yeah, tougher said than done. We try to go back, at least like once a year.
You plan on getting there before camp?
I think so. I think in July. Hopefully. Yeah.
So you joined this team. What did you know about the Steelers before you came here? I mean, obviously you're just across the state, but
yeah.
Did you have some friends on the roster?
You grew up on the West Coast.
Yeah, I mean, I guess other than playing against them, hearing about Coach Tomlin, I didn't really know too much. But coming to visit and then meeting some of the guys, it's been awesome. It's been really good. The O-line room, is younger, but not necessarily inexperienced. A lot of guys have played a bunch of games, so it's been a good opportunity, to help out where I can, while also honing in on my craft against a good defensive line that we have. So, and then Coach Tomlin's everything and more. He's a man. So, I've enjoyed it so far.
It seems like, you just mentioned that offensive line room is younger. Do you feel like the old guy in that room at this point?
Yeah, for sure.
Really?
I feel it. But, O-line is, there's a bunch of good players and we got good depth. And, it's guys that want to win and be good. And, you can see guys always doing work before and after practice. So, that's what I like. I like guys that are excited to be here, want to get better, and want to win games.
That has to be a little bit different perspective for you. I mean, because I'm sure Kelsey and Lane Johnson were the older statesmen in Philadelphia.
Sure.
And well-deserved.
Yeah. I mean, when I first got there, Jason Peters was there too.
Oh, yeah.
Brandon Brooks just came in. So it was it was like walking into the high stakes poker room in the old line room.
Hall of Fame potential there.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, right. I mean, so I think it was a great thing because they were willing to help guys too. They weren't, we're older with this or that. They were, open and accepting. And I'm thankful for mentors like that. And hopefully, I can, be something like that as my career goes on.
Our guest has been Isaac Seumalo, the Steelers' new guard. And, Isaac, we appreciate you sitting down with us here and wish you luck this season. Hopefully we'll get a chance to do this again down the road and maybe in a playoff game or something like that.
That'd be great. That'd be great. I appreciate you guys. Thank you.
Appreciate you a lot. Again, that was Isaac Seumalo, the Steelers' new offensive guard and big offseason acquisition. Good stuff from him there.
Absolutely.
And you think about that offensive line dynamic. We talked about it a lot last year, how young and experienced they were. Now you've got another year's experience under the belts of those guys, and you've added another key piece to that who has plenty of experience himself and brings that nasty demeanor to their
– He's a whale of a player, but I think it's interesting, too, that – You know, he was, as you just mentioned, he was the young guy with some true Hall of Famers around him, where now people are going to be asking him for advice. And he's more than willing to do it and is going to be a positive influence on the younger guys, especially Jones, you would imagine.
Yeah, I think, you know, as he mentioned, you know, he's – I think you see this with a lot of the Polynesian players. They don't they let their actions on the field speak louder than
– Troy is a perfect example.
Troy, I think, Tyson Alualu was similar.
Okay.
You know, they're not, you know, big rah-rah guys in many cases, but they just go out there and play.
Mm-hmm. No,
and there's a love of the game. The culture
– Oh, absolutely, right. It's a different upbringing. I'm sure that there's not generations of Steeler fans that remember Mean Joe on the islands and things like that, you know. And it's – you were talking about this, how much harder it is to – get to practice, and some of these guys have to get on a plane to go to practice for high school and things like that, you know, and go to a different island. I mean, that's a commitment, too.
Yeah, and for a guy like Isaac, I mean, he's grown up around this his entire life. Again, dad's a football coach.
Yeah, I didn't realize some of the stuff you brought up about all the, you know, equipment in the backyard and homeschooling, and it was a one-shop stop, I think.
I mean, that's what, you know, people think about, life of a football coach, and how much time you have to spend coaching football, and then you add, you know, so his wife is basically homeschooling the kids. They're moving from the islands to San Luis Obispo to Corvallis, and the family stayed in Corvallis for a little bit while he
was at college.
While Joe was off, it's tough on the families.
It is. I mean, a lot of examples when I was in the college ranks of. Well, we hired an O-line coach at Akron, and the mother had to pack up their six kids, all of which were like 12 and younger, from Texas, and drive them up to Akron, where we needed him to coach the O-linemen, and he couldn't help with any of that stuff. You know, I mean, the coach's life and the entire family of a coach or anyone in this business can be crazy.
Yeah, but just an interesting family. Like I said, his sister works, in the NFL.
I didn't realize that either. That's interesting.
He's got, they are a football family.
Big time.
And they're also a very intelligent family. As I mentioned, a number of his wife's family members, college professors, went to MIT and places like that.
Right. It's no joke. Right. What they do well.
Yeah.
Yeah. Whether it's on the field or in the classroom, it sounds like. And again, we've talked about this, and he's obviously a very well-spoken, soft-spoken guy. But people rave about his football intelligence too, you know.
So. And I think, you know, if you're intelligent, you're intelligent. You see people who, you know, maybe they're not the most well-spoken people, but they understand football.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's maybe, a melding of, look, he's obviously intelligent, but he also knows football.
Right.
Again,
when
you grow up around it, you can't help but you hear that about, this quarterback, his dad was a football coach.
Yeah. It's definitely a
gym rat. They're gym rats.
Mm-hmm. And – just knowing the commitments and how it works on both sides and what dad does when he comes home from the office and things like that too. And again, it's a good combination of football background and academic background that you can obviously see with them, and it translates to the field.
Yeah. I don't know if you knew this about him, but Isaac was the second center to start as a true freshman
at Oregon State.
Yeah. The other one was Roger Lavassa. And he did it in the 70s.
And so that's a really tough position to do that, too. I mean, you recruit kids as centers and be like, well, you're really, really good. We can get you on the field, but you're going to play guard this year, and then we'll move you to center.
But they didn't just take him. Like, he wasn't flounder at Oregon State. When dad was a football coach there, They didn't just take him because.
No, right.
he could play.
He was a star recruit, yeah. Right. And they put him in the lineup immediately.
Like, he was making trips to USC and places like that, mm-hmm. and he wound up at Oregon State. Just happened to be where his dad coached.
No, it doesn't surprise me at all. I mean, especially with his athletic ability and traits and just sitting next to him, he's very impressive physically as well. Yeah,
the big dude that moves well.
Yeah, I mean, doesn't carry a lot of extra weight. He's got long arms. You know, he's a big, powerful guy.
And obviously works at it a lot, as we've seen here with all the Steelers' offensive linemen. Mm-hmm. We're going to take another break. Yeah. He is Matt Williamson. I am Dale Lally. You're listening to a special edition of The Drive here on Steelers Nation Radio and ESPN 970. We are live from the UPMC Rooney Sports Complex, where we'll be back to finish up the show right after this. Welcome back. I am Dale Lally. He is Matt Williamson. And we're pleased to be joined now, as we were yesterday, by one Thomas Opferman of the Standard. Tom, how you doing?
Doing great, boys. It was nice listening to Ike sit down with you guys. You know, a lot of people said he wasn't a big talker.
It's a little presumptuous starting to call him Ike.
Yeah, you guys like best buds.
Big Ike. You don't like that? You don't think that's a good one? You should have slipped that by him and see if he likes to be known as Big Ike. But you guys did a good job of cracking that nut. You know, I was waiting for him to be kind of a slow interview, but you got some good stuff out of him.
He was a little reluctant, but he had good stuff
to say,
for sure.
Does not like to put the headset on, that's for sure. He sat down and didn't even want to go for it at first.
Well,
we were
kind of
like, you got to talk into the microphone.
There was a lot of hair there.
I love that, too.
Yeah.
It reminds me of another guy whose name ended in a similar sounding fashion back in the day.
Yeah,
there you go.
See him all.
What'd you take away from what he had to say?
I think he's going to be a good influence, a good veteran presence. And I think a lot of people thought that he was kind of propped up by the two guys next to him on mm-hmm. that Eagles offensive line. It was refreshing to hear Kelsey, and I do take it with a grain of salt, because what's he going to do, come out and bash his ex-teammate and friend and be like, yeah,
well,
he stinks,
thing,
I'm glad he's gone.
So you love the one you're with. I always say that whenever somebody says, well, Juju said this or this guy said that.
But
you love the one
on.
You're with. Isaac's no longer with the Eagles. He could have said, we really think that, you know, that these new guys are going to step in here and they're just going to replace Isaac. We won't miss a beat. He didn't say that.
Right. He could have done the vanilla thing, too, and just be like, I wish Isaac well moving forward. Yeah. It was a lot of fun playing with him. No, he gassed him the hell up. So I take that vote of confidence out of a guy like Jason Kelsey, and kind of like what you said, Dale, he didn't have to say anything like that.
Sure.
I like that a lot. I think, you know, this is more than just a product of two Hall of Famers around him on that offensive line.
Yeah, I thought and maybe I was even guilty of this. That line was so star-studded. He even went back to Peters and Lane Johnson and Mulata and Brooks and all those dudes, let alone Kelsey. He could have easily been the forgotten guy, you know, and I'm not saying he's, like, getting out of their shadow.
But his play, like, didn't allow him to become forgotten.
No,
especially
in recent
years. Like, you could make
and
the argument.
That standard was high.
Right. You could make the argument he was right there with Kelsey and Johnson. And
no
I
doubt.
Think a lot of people just, like I said, assume that, he's getting rising tide, lifting all boats.
Right.
With these
he's
two
the
next
fifth
to
guy.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, right.
But Kelsey and them come out, and they're like, nah, this dude was just as good as everybody else, just as important. Yeah. And honestly, there were some times he lifted us up whenever we were struggling.
The tape shows it, too.
Yeah, no question. And, I mean, again, I said this yesterday. He's just an example of it kind of looks like this whole team took the Mario mushroom and just, like, upgraded size a little bit. Like, dwit.
They're
all just so much bigger now. It's just nasty.
There aren't many guards that look like him, too.
No.
You know, he's
athletic.
Yeah, right.
It's funny, you know, you asked him, Matt, you know, what he learned, or does he get critiqued by his dad?
Yeah.
His dad told me that he watches the game both as his dad, obviously.
That's an interesting dynamic,
but
too.
But also as a football coach. And he said, I do a little bit of both there. He said, I'm looking for the effort. He said, you're playing next to Jason Kelsey. Why is Kelsey getting out and getting on that block, you know, 12 yards downfield, and you didn't get there? Like,
okay.
So there's always that,
yeah.
You know.
And it's his dad, and, you know, right. And
so you expect that effort.
I was wondering what kind of critiquer he was, and Isaac danced around that one a little bit.
Yeah.
I think it's more than just call your mom and, you know, make sure things are good at the fam.
No offense to the guards that the Steelers have, Daniels or Dotson, but I am so much more comfortable with this as a sidecar next to Broderick Jones on the left side of that
good
offensive
call.
Line.
Well, here's something we've talked about, Tom. So my belief is, and this was before they drafted Broderick Jones, one of the reasons they bring in a veteran guard on that side is to help Dan Moore out with some of the obviously he's a great communicator, Isaac Seumala.
Right.
So now you've got that interior. You've got three veteran guys on the interior. Your youth is on the outside. It's my belief that Isaac Seumala could make Dan Moore a better player and allow Broderick Jones the time, because people forget.
So you don't rush Jones.
Broderick Jones has started 15 career games at the college level. He is not a finished product by any stretch of the imagination.
Pretty damn good 15 games, though. I think right. that's why people kind of accelerate
yeah.
that a little bit.
I get it, but he does. I mean, you know, if you're talking about, hey, is he a finished product? Not by any means. Whereas Dan, you know, I'm not so quick to just throw Dan Moore aside. I want to see what he looks like with Isaac Samuels next year.
I think Isaac kind of hinted at that, too, because something you and I have talked about a lot, that if you're an offensive lineman, it's not like other positions where you can just throw him out there for 30 snaps and, hey, you're
get real, feet wet.
You're
yeah.
real fast, run go routes. Yeah. You know, you can't run out routes yet, but you can run goes, or you're just a pass rusher, so we'll put you out there in third and eight. If you're a starting left tackle, you don't leave the field. So if you have this, you know, if you have issues to work on, it's going to be exposed. So don't assume that Jones is a starter week one.
And being around here the past couple of days, talking to people like Craig Wolfley, know a lot more about that than me. That's the guy he points to.
Moore.
He's been impressed with Dan Moore. You
right,
know,
right.
He doesn't say he's not impressed with Broderick Jones, but sure. he's really noted what Moore has built his body into over this past offseason, and said that his footwork looks a lot better too. And you know, maybe that's what a guy getting your potential replacement drafted will do to a guy. You know, maybe kick it into that extra gear a little bit. So
I think Moore lasts in this league a long time.
It will, Dale. I am starting to come around to more like what you're saying, where it's not just a placeholder. Like, Broderick's going to have to do a lot of work to try to
beat that guy out.
Dan Moore,
you got a two-year incumbent starter on there who basically won that job a couple of years ago, and you got to knock him off. Broderick Jones isn't going to shy away from that.
No.
I mean, he did that at Georgia. You know,
right.
they had incumbent guys ahead of him. He understands that dynamic. Now you're a professional, and now, you know, this is a team that traded up, albeit a little bit to go get you, but that doesn't mean you're going to be guaranteed anything.
No. I mean, that's the
beauty
of the situation.
Spot.
Right,
you're going to be
right.
on the roster, but
I mean, I'm sure in training camp, we're going to talk about the left tackle battle.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the way it should go.
And who looks better and which ones, mm-hmm. you know, which ones worry. Because the idea is you're not doing this to, oh, let's just throw a guy out there and get him some work and get him acclimated. Uh-uh. You're protecting your franchise
yes.
quarterback, potential franchise quarterback.
Side note, though, and Broderick Jones looks pretty good.
He does.
I'm not saying he's guaranteed anything. I 100% agree with you, but I hope people aren't misconstruing this like, oh, that Jones guy doesn't look
right.
like the part
right,
or
yeah.
anything. No, he looks just fine.
No, I'm just reminding people that, again, you're talking about a young guy who has 15 career starts under his belt, you know, and you're going to throw him out there in week one against Bosa.
Right, right.
And the Steelers have had to, in the past couple of years, throw those linemen into the fire who weren't as high a pedigree guy.
They did with Dan
Moore.
Dan Moore's
example.
Dan
Moore's
a perfect example.
Kendrick Green.
Kendrick Green.
Right,
I mean,
right.
those guys had to come in and start right away with third round, fourth round pedigrees. So if they can
not
afford
the anymore,
themselves,
right.
you know, maybe a couple weeks into the season until Broderick finally dethrones Dan Moore, I think that's great for them. Do you think that the right side is locked down with Chooks, or do you think there
yes.
could be a possibility that Dan swings over there eventually?
No, you know, mm-hmm. and I've heard people, you know,
talk about
that.
It.
Here's the thing. Dan Moore's rookie season, the reason he wound up being the starting left tackle is, if you remember, Zach Banner got hurt that year. The idea
was
supposed to be you had Banner on one side and Chooks on the other, on the left side.
And then MetLife Stadium and Turf had
right.
other ideas.
And Banner wasn't ready at the start of camp. So Dan Moore got all the work on the left side and Chooks was on the right side in that camp. And then when Banner came back, he only lasted like a week. Mm-hmm. So Dan Moore only practiced on that right side, because when they did that, they moved Chooks back to the left side and put Moore on the right side. It's like three practices on the right side.
Right.
That's what he's had.
He's a left tackle. And if he's going to play tackle, he's a left
tackle.
And
he played left tackle in college. He played a little bit of guard in college.
I think he also could be a really good guard, probably not here, because
right.
they have a great
because
pair of them.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I think that is also a fallback plan for him at some point.
And then on the Chooks side of things, too, I mean, he could carve himself out into a very serviceable right tackle as well. I think he is.
I think he's a league average right tackle.
Which, if the rest of your line is above average, I mean, you can't have superstars at all five spots.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
And especially on O-line, I would rather have five B's across the board, or
yes.
B minuses or B pluses, than here's an A and here's a D. You know?
Yeah.
Like,
which one's the Snickers bar? Which
right.
one are we going to go after and attack? I mean, that's because that's what teams will do.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you'll see it constantly when you see certain teams play. Why is Myles Garrett lined up inside? Or why is T.J. Watt rushing from this spot?
Because
why is Cam Hayward moving over there? because
their left guard can't block anybody.
They have a matchup that they want to try to exploit.
And they might, and the Steelers might now have seven C-plus to B-plus guys.
Well, I was just going to say that you guys talked about depth in the first hour.
Maybe more. Yeah.
And it was such an anomaly last year for no one to get hurt on that offensive line. You had to know it's going to happen this year at some point, and they're prepared to deal with it. If a guard goes down, Herbig jumps right in.
I'm comfortable with Herbig,
that for a couple of games. You know?
I mean, one of the other things, and Matt loves to do this, is you can play let's draw up an offensive formation where –
personnel group.
Yes. You've got six offensive linemen on the field.
Yep.
And, oh, by the way, you got maybe two tight ends out there and a running.
One of them is a monster.
Yeah, literally. One of them is another monster. Like, are they running the ball here? But you can also throw the ball out of those formations and do things like that.
Like, I guarantee if Broderick Jones is not the opening day starting left tackle, he plays snaps in that game.
I bet you're right, too. Yeah. And the tight end thing, too, you know, you got to have a hitter in there if you're Matt Canada for Darnell Washington. Because if you're just running the ball, and he's extra beef, you got to have a play in there where he releases and gets you 15
yards. I mean, they did with Gentry. I mean, you know, right. These little
and I think Darnell's
tight end screens.
A bit more of a gifted catcher than Gentry already.
He brings
a lot more athlete.
That's for sure.
He gets more downfield. He brings more after the catch.
So I love that you can lull these teams to sleep with, 80's out there. Looks like they're going to run the ball 20 yards down the middle of the field.
Oh, man. I mean, think what you can do with six offensive linemen, Freiermuth, Washington, Harris, and Pickens.
It's a lot of options for an offensive
coordinator. Right, but they can get downfield.
Yeah. Yes.
And you're going to get maybe not goal line defense against that, but you're going to get base.
You might get a 4-4 or straight.
They're going to bring an extra linebacker on the field or something like that, and all of a sudden you get a mismatch.
Right. Pickens is one-on-one on the outside or whatever it is.
I hate comparing, great groups to modern groups and saying, they look like this, but it does remind you a little bit of Hernandez-Gronk when it comes to the Patriots.
Just the versatility of them, that
might be really like their offensive MO is going through these two tight ends. Maybe not this year, but when Darnell gets up to speed too, it could be real dangerous.
Cole Holcomb on last week, and Matt, you asked him about, playing against these Philly guys. I'm glad they're on. I don't have to do that anymore.
We asked him about Isaac. What's it like to play against him at all times?
They're nasty. Yeah.
And I think the Steelers offensively added a lot of nasty.
Yes, a lot of size,
offseason.
A lot of nasty, but good movement players too. I mean, Jones moves really well. Washington moves really well. Isaac moves really well for their size and their length. And it's an impressive group.
Yeah, absolutely. So
a lot of possibilities.
I like it. So I always like watching this. The sprinklers are now on here in front of us.
There's an art to it.
There is an art to it.
It's not quite the Bellagio or whatever.
I feel like I'm at Bushwood. I'm at Bushwood Country Club, man.
Bye, Bushwood. No, but it's just the synchronicity of it all is pretty cool.
Yeah.
You just want to go out there and run through it.
Yeah, absolutely. Maybe I will.
I can get you a rainout. But,
another good week, dude.
Another fun show, another week in the books here. The ball rolling into the water there. Where'd that ball come from? Oh, I guess we're still –
still some folks out
still
there
some folks out
stuff.
There doing some work. That ball rolled. That's going to be a soaking wet ball. CJ, go run over there and grab that football.
Take your headset off first, though.
One other note here.
We don't need another Wolfley electrocuted here.
As CJ Wolfley noted here, Isaac Seumalo wearing the number 73. As
who famously wore that?
A couple of people.
I know.
One would be Craig Wolfley, and the other would be the Ranger. So
Wolf always has a soft spot for the 73s.
He always does, absolutely.
always finds them.
He always finds them. They'll have many conversations.
I think there will be one-sided conversations. Just the hunch, talking to both those guys.
Absolutely. But that's going to do it for our show today. We appreciate Tom Offerman stopping by here and chatting with us. We appreciate Steelers PR getting Isaac Seumalo for us as well. And we appreciate you listening. For my partner,
you back next week.
We will be back next week. Same schedule. Tuesday through Thursday, 11 to 1. Hopefully get some more players on here with you. For my partner, Matt Williamson, for CJ here on site keeping us on the air, I'm Dale Lally. We thank you for listening to this special edition of The Drive on Steelers Nation Radio and ESPN 970.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.